Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Phil Dierking and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Phil Dierking.
Governments around the world have promised billions of dollars to replant trees on millions of hectares of poor land. What is missing are the businesses to make this happen. A new report by the World Resources Institute says it wants to solve this problem. The nonprofit environmental organization wants to show that it is possible to make a profit from restoring deforested land. Experts say that demands on land and effects of climate mean the world needs every hectare possible to produce food, clean the air, and water. Forests also are important for easing the effects of greenhouse gases, blamed for warming the Earth's atmosphere. A group of 47 countries have promised to restore an area of deforested land equal in size to Mongolia by 2020. African and Latin American investors have promised $2 billion for the project. Sophia Faruqi is the author of the report. She said now it is more important for the investors to act on their promises. She said governments and non-government organizations cannot do everything. They also need investment from private businesses. This means profit must be involved. The report brings attention to 14 companies that want to make money restoring land. The authors wanted business models that could create strong results. Brinkman Group is a tree planting business based in Canada. The Brinkman Group website says it has planted 1.4 billion trees on 1 million hectares of land. The company got its start replanting forests that had been clear-cut in Canada. In the 1990s, Brinkman started growing trees on land in Central America where farmers had used slash-and-burn methods. Brinkman created a forest environment with a mix of trees, including teak for furniture and flooring, and rosewood for guitars. To protect the plant life, individual trees will be selected to be cut, not clear-cut at harvest time. Some kinds of trees are not usually grown to sell for a profit. It took years to learn how to grow these trees from cuttings. The effort is starting to have some success after 20 years. The first harvests have begun, and company founder Dirk Brinkman says they are starting to make a profit. It's a bit surprising for some looking at this that this is possible, Brinkman said, but it takes time to prove. Other companies included in the report are lowering the cost of restoration. Biocarbon Engineering flies drones that plant trees. Drones are faster and cheaper than replanting by hand, the company says. They can also go to difficult-to-reach places. Other companies have invested to support their current products. One example is Guayaki, a company that sells tea made from a plant that grows in the shade called yerba mate. The company says it has planted 500,000 trees in a deforested part of Brazil's forest to shade its important crop. The report also includes some new business models. A major cause of deforestation in Africa is the growing demand for building materials and charcoal. To solve this problem, A company based in Kenya called Komaza gives small farmers tree seedlings to plant on unused parts of their land. When the trees mature in 10 to 12 years, Komaza says it will buy the trees back for a guaranteed price. The company then harvests, processes, and sells the wood. More than 9,000 farmers are raising more than 2 million trees for Komaza. However, Komaza has not yet made a profit. Aisha Wagle is president of Komaza. "Trees take a long time to grow," Wagle said. She noted that the company could cut down a lot of trees immediately and make a profit. But she added, "The longer we wait, the more valuable they are." The report's author, Sophia Faruqi, says the long wait to make any money is one of the problems for some investors. Wagle said there are many problems facing Komaza, from rainy seasons that don't appear to poor roads that make it hard to truck trees to market. Other difficulties include unclear land ownership in many developing countries, which makes investing in farmers and land restoration risky. And government policy may change during the investment period, especially in developing countries. The Brinkman Group said it got agreements with officials when it planted its tropical hardwood trees. "We were promised a tax-free harvest," he said. But the situation changed after many years. 20 years later, the bureaucracy is going, "No, no, we tax logging." And we're going, "No, no, we've got a grandfathered agreement." "Oh, well, we don't have a copy of that agreement anymore." It took Brinkman several years to fix this dispute. Mushfiq Mubarak, an economics professor at Yale, says that the idea of making money from planting trees is still very new. He said there is not a lot of information about the possible risks and returns. Mubarak said he is pleased the report gave ideas for business models. But he notes that since the information comes from the companies themselves, more independent research is needed. I'm Phil Dierking.
Apple says it will give iPhone users the ability to turn off a software tool that can slow down device performance. The change is expected to come this spring with the release of Apple's latest mobile operating system update, iOS 11.3. The announcement followed heavy criticism and user anger when it became public that Apple had secretly been slowing down operating systems of older iPhones. The slowdown issue was first pointed out in internet reports. Apple admitted the practice in December. In an explanation, the company said it only took the action to prevent some aging batteries from failing and completely shutting devices down. All rechargeable batteries used in mobile devices become less effective over time. Certain temperature conditions can also cause a battery to age faster. Apple said these older batteries could unexpectedly shut down during times of high energy demand. It called such shutdowns unacceptable and said that is why the company took power management measures to prevent them. Many people have long suspected Apple intentionally slows the performance of older iPhones in an effort to get users to buy new ones. Apple has strongly denied this suspicion. We have never, and would never, do anything to intentionally shorten the life of any Apple product or degrade the user experience to drive customer upgrades, the company said. Despite this explanation, Apple was criticized for not informing iPhone owners about the power issues before it decided to slow devices down. Many owners argued they would have chosen to replace batteries if they had known the issues beforehand. Several lawsuits seeking monetary damages from Apple were also started by iPhone owners. The owners argued they would not have spent money on new iPhones if they had known there were other ways to fix slow performance. In a statement Wednesday, Apple said it had received requests for information about the issue from U.S. government agencies. The statement followed a Bloomberg report that the Department of Justice and Securities and Exchange Commission were looking at whether the company's actions had violated any securities laws. To answer user concerns, Apple announced it was offering owners of an iPhone 6 or later the chance to replace batteries at a reduced cost. The price to replace a battery was cut from $79 to $29, with the deal available worldwide through December 2018. In its announcement about the iOS 11.3 update, the company said users themselves will be able to turn off the power management feature. In addition, a new tool will be added to show iPhone battery health and suggest when service is needed. Apple also previewed some other new features to be released with its iOS 11.3 update this spring. The update will include several new Animojis. These are animated characters iPhone X owners can use with their voices and facial expressions to create videos and messages. In addition, a new feature in the iOS Health app is designed to organize user data from various medical facilities in one view. The Health Records feature can also be used to send messages to patients about conditions, medicines, and laboratory results. Apple says all medical data is encrypted for user protection. The iOS 11.3 update also includes a change to Apple Music, the company says makes it easier to play unlimited music videos without seeing advertisements. Also, Apple News will include new features to find and view the most important videos of the day. Finally, a new tool called Business Chat will provide a way for users to directly connect with company help representatives from within the Messages service. I'm Brian Lynn.
From VOA Learning English. Welcome to The Making of a Nation. I'm Steve Ember. The Mexican-American War officially ended in 1848. Mexico agreed to give California and New Mexico to the United States. And Mexico would recognize the Rio Grande River as the southern border of Texas. Thus, President James K. Polk had succeeded in expanding the United States. He had added Oregon, California, Texas, and New Mexico to the country. Now the country faced the problem of what to do with slavery in the new territories.
As soon as it became clear in the American consciousness that Polk's aim in the Mexican War was to gain southwestern territory, California and what's now the American Southwest, then the slavery question becomes very, very salient in a powerful way that it had been kind of sort of kept under wraps for 20, 25 years.
Robert Merry is an historian and the author of a book about James K. Polk.
So we went through 10 years of kind of political hell in America as we struggled with that issue, which could only be settled through force of arms.
Southerners argued that they had the right to bring slaves into California and New Mexico. Northerners opposed any further spread of slavery, but the real question was a legal one. Did Congress have the power to control or ban slavery in the territories? While Congress debated the issue, the country moved quickly into the presidential campaign of 1848. President Polk was old, tired, and in poor health. He said he would keep his promise to serve only one term. Polk felt that he had done his duty. During the first days of his administration, he listed the goals of his presidency. First, he wanted to reduce the tax on imports. Second, he wished to establish an independent treasury, which the Whigs had voted out. Third, he hoped to settle the Oregon border dispute with Britain. And fourth, he wanted to make California part of the United States. Less than 4 years later, he had succeeded with each item on his list. The United States and Britain agreed on a compromise in the Oregon dispute. In 1846, Polk was able to establish the independent treasury again, where the government could keep its own funds. No longer would government money be kept in private banks. That same year, Polk was able to get Congress to approve a bill that greatly reduced the taxes on imports. And the peace treaty with Mexico gave the United States not only California, but also New Mexico. So the president believed he had served his country well. Polk, however, had not served his party well. He was not a good politician. He failed to unite competing groups within the Democratic Party. What was worse, he let them move even farther apart. There seemed to be no strong Democratic candidate who could unite the party. At one extreme were the supporters of former President Martin Van Buren, New York Democrats opposed to slavery. They were called barn burners. They got this name from their opponents who claimed that they were willing to burn down the entire barn to remove pro-slavery rats. At the party's other extreme were the Democrats of the South, led by John C. Calhoun of South Carolina. In every state, the Democrats were divided between those who supported the Polk administration and those who opposed it. Democratic candidates met in Baltimore in May of 1848 to choose their candidate for president. On the fourth vote, the delegates chose Senator Lewis Cass of Michigan as the party's presidential candidate. Cass was 66 years old. He was considered a moderate Democrat. He was a Northerner who did not oppose slavery. On the question of slavery in the new territories, Cass believed that the people living in those areas should make the decision. The barn burner Democrats of New York refused to accept Cass as their candidate. They walked out of the Baltimore convention. Senator Henry Clay of Kentucky expected to be the presidential candidate of the Whig Party. The Whigs had nominated Clay as their candidate in three earlier elections, but Clay lost all three times. In 1848, older members of the party still supported him, but young Whigs felt a new candidate was needed. Some party leaders remembered how William Henry Harrison had won the presidency for the Whigs in 1840 by campaigning as a military hero. The country now had a new military hero, Old Zach, General Zachary Taylor. He and his men never lost a battle in the Mexican War. Several times, General Taylor defeated Mexican forces much larger than his. Taylor was 63 years old. He had almost no formal education. He had spent almost 40 years in the West as an Indian fighter and commander of small army bases. Some politicians did not believe Taylor had the ability to be president, but his supporters put great energy into their campaign. They tried to sell the idea that the general was the only man who could defeat the candidate of the Democratic Party. Finally, Taylor won the Whig Party's nomination. Many Americans did not like either presidential candidate because of the candidate's policies on slavery. Lewis Cass saw nothing wrong with slavery if that was what the people wanted, and Zachary Taylor was a slave owner. So a group of men in Ohio decided to form a new political party. They called it the Free Soil Party, because they believed in free land for free settlers. They wanted no further spread of slavery. The Free Soil leaders proposed a convention of all who supported their ideas. 10,000 people went to the convention in Buffalo, New York. For 2 days, the delegates debated the slavery issue and discussed their choice of a candidate for president. They also worked on a platform, a statement of their party's purpose. The platform declared that slavery was an institution of the states, not the nation. It said Congress had no right to help spread slavery by permitting it in the new Western territories. The platform declared that the issue should be faced with firmness. No more slave states. No more slave territory. No more compromises with slavery anywhere. Convention delegates then voted on candidates. They chose former President Martin Van Buren as the party's candidate. The people of the nation voted on November 7, 1848. It was the first time a presidential election was held on the same day in all parts of the country. Zachary Taylor won both the popular and electoral votes. He became the 12th President of the United States. Congress met a few weeks after the election, long before Taylor took office. It faced serious problems. Territorial governments were needed for the areas won in the war against Mexico. California especially needed help. Gold had been discovered in California. Thousands of people were moving there. A government was needed to protect the lives and property of the new population. Then there was the question of laws forcing northern states to return escaped slaves to their owners. The laws were not always obeyed. Southerners wanted a new law that would be easier to enforce. Congress found it difficult to act on these problems. The House of Representatives was controlled by members of the Free Soil Party, which opposed slavery. The Senate was controlled by Southerners who supported slavery. The two sides found it almost impossible to agree on anything. Early in January 1849, a congressman proposed a bill to first limit and then end slavery in the District of Columbia. Opposition to the bill was strong. It was amended. The new bill would simply close all places in the District of Columbia where slaves were bought and sold. Southern congressmen disliked the bill, even as amended. They organized a committee representing every one of the southern states. Senator John C. Calhoun said the committee should write a declaration explaining the position of the South. The committee agreed, and Calhoun wrote most of the declaration himself. The Southern Declaration accused the North of many aggressions. The South, it said, faced many dangers. Soon there would be enough free states to control both the House and the Senate. And then the Constitution would be changed and all slaves would be freed. And this, said the Southern Declaration, would lead to bitter hostility and war between North and South. The Declaration called on the people of the South to unite and be firm in their opposition to the North. With this new firmness, Southern lawmakers fought to make slavery legal in the new territories. They effectively blocked proposals for territorial governments in California and New Mexico. Congress ended its term on March 4th, 1849, without any progress. Zachary Taylor was sworn in as president that same day. Americans hoped that the new president would be able to bring the North and South together again. But Taylor really had no policy. He could not support a bill to keep slavery out of the territories. That might start a quick revolt among the southern states. He could not support a bill to let slavery spread into the territories. That would make the North rise in anger. Taylor tried to be neutral. He hoped the problem of slavery would solve itself. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us next time for The Making of a Nation, American History from VOA Learning English.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.